Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everyone. I would like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Tonight is Monday, October 11th, 2021. This is scan number 2766. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. On my host team this evening is Kim Lakin, a NASCA ambassador from Colorado. So I'm thrilled to have Kim as part of my host team this evening. Tonight, our show is special guest night. We have a very, very evening. His name is Peter Elsley. He's a NASCA, longtime NASCA family member, ambassador for NASCA in Canada. He is from Ontario, Canada. We are very pleased to have Peter with us tonight. A little bit more about Peter. Before we bring him on, he provided us with a really nice bio. But before I tell you more about Peter, I want to talk to you about NASCA and NASCA's mission, because as you know, NASCA is all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. If you'd like to support Peter, our special guest this evening, I highly encourage you to do so, and you can support him by calling in and being a member of our panel. All you have to do to be a member, no experience necessary, is to call the number 646-595-2118. That's area code 646-595-2118. And my co-host Kim will welcome you in on our back line. And by calling in and being a member of the panel, you'll have an opportunity to ask Peter a question or a comment that is related to his story. And it is his night tonight. He is our special guest. So I'd like to tell you a little bit more about NASCA. As you know, NASCA has a single purpose, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect. Two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So if you'd like to join our panel and be a member, the number to do so is area code 646-595-2118. A little bit more about our special guest. As you know, our special guest is Peter Elsley. He's from Chatham, Kent, Ontario, Canada. He is a child abuse survivor, and he's originally from New South Wales, Australia. So I try and work on my good day is how you say hello, obviously, in Australia. So Peter's been coaching me, and I think I got about a C-plus tonight. I need some practice. But in all seriousness, Peter says, and he states that his abuse began at 3 years old at the hands of his mother, followed by his father, and later by his own sister, sexually abused him from 13 to 14 years old. His cousin lured him. He sexually molested, abused, forced sexual incest, gang molestation, and committed physical and verbal child abuse. Peter was kept home from school due to all the abuse that included abuse from his own sister. Peter states at school he was bullied, he was teased, and he was called names. And he explains, he thought the sexual abuse had stopped when he was 14 years old. However, he was wrong, and there was another event that happened to him that we will talk about a little later in the show. Now, as I mentioned, some of the events from Peter's early childhood, and we do break the show up into three segments. The first is early childhood to about the age of 18. We'll break and go to the panel. The panel has an opportunity to interact with Peter and ask him a question or a comment regarding his story. The middle segment, we talk about the middle years, about 18 to 30. We'll break again to the panel, so hopefully the panel would have an opportunity to interact with Peter a second time, if time permits. And then in the end, we talk about Peter's healing journey and what life is like now. But I do want to mention I've read the first part of Peter's story. I know Peter personally. We know Peter at NASCA. He is a NASCA family member. And while he did endure this treatment, he is coming out the other side, which is the side of hope and healing, and has some really positive things going on in his life, which is the beauty of the healing journey and the work that we do at NASCA to give our members a platform like this show to talk about not only their past, which helps others who are starting or going on a similar journey and can relate to some of the events, but also of the hope and the healing and the support. So with that being said, being our guest, and Peter, I'm going to unmute your mic and welcome you to the show. Hi. Good day. Good day, Peter.
Good day, Penelope. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm a little overwhelmed and just a few butterflies roaming around, but I'm trying to keep them settled at the moment, but yeah, you would be about a C-plus at the moment. You'd have to work on it.
I agree. I completely earned that grade. I totally agree. Maybe by the end of the show, I can improve. I will show and I will try. I'll practice and maybe I can improve that grade a little bit. I know sometimes on the show we have laughs. And I think humor is good medicine. It does break out some of the seriousness of the subject matter. So please don't take that, either you, Peter, anybody listening, as being disrespectful. But we do like to have a little bit of fun. But as you know, Peter, because Peter, I know you've told your story on NASCA before. In fact, I was on the show when you told your story of how we met initially. And you're so articulate. You do a really good job of telling your story. And we do like a little bit, even though you've told the story before, just maybe a little bit of context, because we do structure the shows in a way where they are archived and we have so many people that go back and listen to them. And it helps so many people along in their healing journey, what they learn from our show. So we'd like to have some consistency in the way that we, you know, we take the special guests, like, you know, through life chronologically and just paint a picture, right, of what the beginning of your life and who was in your family. And it doesn't even have to be about the abuse, but maybe you mentioned that you were born in New South Wales, maybe just where you were born, what that community was like, who was in the home, you know, in your family of origin. Just give us some background as to how your life began.
Yeah, thanks, Penelope. Yeah, I mean, I got to settle down. As it was mentioned that my child, the abuse had started right from the very time when I was a baby and right through. And so, you know, it was nonstop from there, from when I was a child, being abused by my own mother, and then it was followed by my father. Then later on in the years, it was my sister, she was 3 years younger than me, and then it was just more like having to be that oldest in the family, of having to claw my way to the top to try and see if I can prove myself to be the better person, but it wasn't to be. But the abuse all started when I was a baby, and at the time I was born, and then at 3 months when my mother was bathing me, is when the next time round that my mother abused me, when she tried to drown me at three months old, and then as years progressed, it was just more like that. Any visitors that came around, my mother would quickly take me back inside the house and put me back into the crib, and the door was shut, and I was hidden from everybody. So, you know, as a child at that time, you know, I didn't know. I was screaming the top of my lungs out. But as years grew by, the inevitable happened around the age when I was 6 years old is where it all began. And my mother and father both had government jobs. They are also alcoholics and gamblers. So, they had very good jobs. And so it was just they'll push me aside and my sister aside and send us over to our cousin's place for babysitting while they go and do their social activities, and then it would go on to for weeks and months that we were babysitted, and then I felt it was going to be fun being over at my cousin's place with my auntie, and then that was about the time at the age of six that the facing of the nightmare, of the terror, the fear, the shame, and the guilt, and the dirtiness from a family member, and he was my cousin, who was on my mother's side, and he was much, much older than me. He did serve in the Australian Army Reserve, so he would have been in his late 30s, I believe, and he very much lured me into his bedroom to show me some models, and then that's when it all began, that he would start introducing, showing me explicit material of magazines, of naked people doing stuff in the magazines, which I had no idea what it was all about. And then he forced me to have oral sex with him, and because he would pee in my mouth, and if I spilt a drop, that there had been consequences, and then he would push me down onto the bed, and he would insert himself inside me, and by hurting me, and again he would pee inside me, and so this continued, and just having to deal with him and having to deal with the pain I was going, you know, because I was going to school and I was bleeding and, you know, being bullied because, you know, of where I came from, you know, and being called a lot of names, that I was a faggot, having sex with a man. I was so many names that I can think of. So sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. So to me, because you're being called names, it sounds like there were some people that were aware that you were being sexually abused by your cousin. I mean, if they were calling you names, then there was some awareness. Am I correct?
I believe you're somewhat correct, but I believe that I believe, anyways, it would have came from my sister. She would say anything to try to get me into trouble, but I have a high tolerance against bullies, and you know, but myself also was that bully as well, because I need to stand up for myself as a child, but I would be punished by my parents. You know, if I was punished at school, then they'll finish me off with abuse, physical abuse. And, you know, it was just nonstop with the, you know, my mother will send me to school with bruises all over me because my mother would pinch me until on every part of my body. I'd go to school with all these bruises and, you know, but it's just like, but this business with my cousin, I felt so busted up from the inside and out. And, you know, telling me that he says, you know, asking me, you know, can I keep a secret? And I said, sure. But I had to keep it quiet from people, including my parents, with my sister. And, but, you know, apart from all this sexual abuse that was taking place with my cousin, which I had endured throughout all my 8 years, and then there was the physical abuse, there was the verbal abuse, the emotional abuse that just continued and continued with my parents, and you know, which to me was it was just horrifying. My safety, my safe place to be was being under the house playing with my toy cars, and I was accompanied by my golden retriever Labrador, Goldie. She would be under the house with me. I'm drawing all these little stick pictures underneath the house, you know, come dinner time. My sister was very much a big mouth, you know, because there was some food that was put on my plate. I didn't like it. And it's just that I would excuse myself to go to the toilet. I would dump the food into the toilet because I didn't like it. My sister found out that I did that. And when my mum came out and heard that what I did, she stopped me at my tracks, and I wasn't allowed to leave the toilet until all the food that I threw into the toilet bowl was consumed. And so that was pretty much within that part of the abuse with my mother. And, you know, just to add salt to the wound, you know, just, you know, and then the bullying still kept going at school, that about eating food out of toilet bowls and all that. It's just,
Your sister,
sorry.
It sounds to me like your sister, she just, 3 years younger, but it sounds like she got on the bandwagon, you know, pretty quickly in her life to be aligned with your parents in the maltreatment, possibly because the other alternative was to be receiving it instead of giving it. And that's what it sounds like to me, is that she just
made
a choice about this.
It didn't matter to my sister, you know. She was mommy and daddy's little girl, and, you know, like both my parents, my father in particular, you know, he's very mean, he's very nasty, he's cruel. It's just complete evilness with my father. It's just, he has no soul. I mean, you know, it's just disheartening on my part that I, you know, because soccer was part of my life as a junior, and I got nothing but verbal abuse and physical abuse when I used to, when I played soccer as a junior. My father, now I warn everybody with the coarse language. It's very distasteful, but my father would yell out to me and call me, you're playing like a silly cunt. You know, come on, let's go. You're playing like a little girl, you know. He'd call me those kind of words, especially that first word that I mentioned all the time. And it was just, you know, his gambling and alcohol played a big role. And, you know, that he put money on the dogs. He was with people. And, you know, all this was going on even during the time with all the sexual abuse and that I was getting with my cousin. But my father, he went and gambled. He put money on the dogs. He won almost $250,000. He put that $250,000 back on the dogs again, and he lost $250,000. I mean, you got a parent who has two children, you know. Regardless, my sister's been tough against me, but, you know, I have no idea. My grandparents had no idea why we were living in a commission housing when my parents both had top government jobs for the throughout the federal government, for the federal government. And, you know, it's what would possess a father to, you know, he wins this money and you think, wow, what could you do with that $250,000 for your own family? And then all of a sudden you put it back onto the, to bet on the dogs and you lose $250,000. I mean, you got a family, you got a son, a daughter.
That's a good point, and that's a great point to bring up. And I didn't mean to interject here, but I do want to say, you know, there are so many forms of maltreatment that you have already shared with us. I mean, it's just, Peter, it's just overwhelming because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, how did you turn out so good? I know you, right? With all of this, I mean, no child deserves to be born into that. No child deserves to be born into a safe place, a place to be safe. And
exactly.
I'm glad you brought up, but even the gambling, because I think, you know, when you have a parent with an addiction, when you have a parent that has mental illness, and you have a parent, I mean, these all have, you know, it impacts children's development and their well-being. And so, you know, the fact that you're bringing it up, I think, is really important. So I'm pointing it out because maltreatment or trauma to a child can happen in many different forms, and you're naming so many of them. And the gambling is one of them.
Exactly, Penelope. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, we know today in real life that gambling, alcohol, you know, do forgive me for those whoever are listening on tonight's panel. I don't mean to bring in with the alcohol, but, you know, alcohol, gambling, I mean, both my mother and father are alcoholic, but it was horrifying. And, you know, even at the time when my mother and father divorced, there was, you know, the break, there was a break there was that break in between with my cousin abusing us, and then it started again, you know, that we were, it was like, it's like there's this punishment. Why are we getting punished? And it started again, that my cousin started doing it all over again and do forgive me for the, and I'm warning everybody. But when he, just the long story short of it was that the one time, I think it was about 10 years old, he grabbed me, he called the school up and said to the teachers that my sister and I were sick from school. He kept us home from school. For whatever reason, I don't know, we were both fine. And he grabbed me by the arm. He dragged me into the bed, in my bedroom. My sister was still in the bedroom, in her bedroom, sorry. And he ripped my clothing off, and he pushed me down face first onto the bed, and he rammed himself inside me. He peed inside me and stayed there with a knife to my throat and said, "This is what I want you to do to your sister. And if you don't do this to your sister, there are going to be consequences." And Sister and I had a bath together. I touched her, but nothing else happened. And my cousin stood over us. He peed on us. He ejaculated on us. And, you know, it all, that's where it all began. The consequences I end up paying for. I took the punishment of dealing with the consequences rather doing what I had to do to my sister. And I just felt, did I do the right thing? Did I do the wrong thing? Should I have listened to him? But the consequences was Penelope, that my cousin who was playing football, he took me to his training program, and three of his football teammates came into the dressing shed, took me into the men's stalls in the disability store, and three of them just brutally molested me because I didn't fulfill his fantasy role to do what I had to do to my sister. So, you know, it's whatever happened to my sister with him, I have no idea. And my heart goes to her, even though that her and I have a lot of issues against one another. But whatever happened to her with him, my heart goes with her all the way, because I've been there, I've done it, and I know what she went through. So
we have to break the channel. I think we all need a break right now, and I know you, I'm sure you do too. I mean, no one, I think we're, all of our hearts are bleeding for that little boy and little girl right now. I know we're human. No young boy should ever be terrorized. That's a heinous, heinous crime. And I know you just second-guessed your decision. No young boy should have to ever make that kind of decision, ever. As heinous as the acts themselves. Children should never be put in that position. I mean, it is just your maltreatment is to young children, and I just want to say you're so courageous for sharing that with us. And I just still marvel at just, you're just such a wonderful, giving, kind, hopeful human being. I think anybody listening to your story, you are a testament to the fact that, you know, healing is possible because of what you shared with us. And you've given so many people hope.
Me sharing my story, and I've been listening this to other people's comments and listening to other people that have been abused, survived from abuse, and it just starts ringing my brain that, you know, yeah, it bothers me of sharing my story, but I want to look at it in the positive way that it's bringing out awareness for adult survivors from today, and even if there's children today that have been abused and that parents don't know that something's going on. I mean, at least there's something, that any person that comes on this radio to tell their story is to get the awareness out there, and, you know, hopefully that we're touching somebody's heart, whether it's a male or a female. I mean, getting somebody to come forward to give that encouragement to open up and come out of that shell, because I agree,
and you are giving people permission by telling your story tonight. You are giving people that permission, really. I'm going to go down the panel now, Peter, and I'm sure that there's a lot of support and comments and or questions from the panel. So as I bring you on one by one, I'll let you know. So good day, Kim. You are on with you.
Good day. So this is the first time I've said it. I'll have to learn it, Peter.
well done, Kim. You did a little bit better than Penelope.
I'm not competing. Not with Penelope, anyway.
Oh, I'm happy to have Kim beat me. I'll root for Kim any day of the week.
Sorry, I am.
Well, I'm just so sorry, Peter. My heart breaks for you, and as Penelope said, you and both you and your sister, and what was going on with your cousin too. It just makes me wonder, how much older was your cousin than you?
I when he first lured me at the age of six, if I'm not gravely mistaken, he would have been in his late 30s, I believe, late 30s to early 40s.
Wow. Oh, I'm so sorry. I think in my mind I pictured more of a child, but...
Can you imagine your own child that's been... brutally hurt from the inside, goes to school and he's bleeding, and then when you start getting bullied, that's the I was bleeding from inside out, and it's not fun when you go to school and then you got people calling names at you, you got a period that he's having a period or something like that, but it's not true. It's just what he did to me was very brutal, very brutal.
I'm so sorry. And nobody at school really said anything?
Nobody. It was just mostly between myself and against the kids at school that have been teased, been bullied, been called a garbage can eater. Because I would go into garbage cans at the school and take food out of the garbage because, I wasn't given food because my punishment. So, I'm being called that, but then I turn that around and then I end up becoming that bully to get my revenge because, and then I'm in trouble because I would jump one of the kids for a fight and then it would start. Someone will put me into the principal the next day, and then I will get abused by the principal with the cane across the fingertips, and then my parents will deal with me when I get home. So to answer your question, no one knew anything. No one was aware what was going on. It was just nothing but bullying and teasing.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but you didn't have anybody there to support you and be there for you. If not right. And that you didn't weren't able to build a healthy brother-sister bond, it sounds like. How much younger was your sister?
My sister was 3 years younger. I mean, when she was born, she had so much attention. So the difference between when I was born, my mother would quickly get me into the house and put me into the crib. Whilst with my sister, on the other hand, she was getting all the attention. And so I think if anyone's listening, that I think there's a bit of a neglect going on here with, you know, the mother hiding her son so that people doesn't see him, and, you know. So if that doesn't say that's neglect, then I don't know what you would call it. It's just I don't know.
Most
I have no idea.
Neglect. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Just, it sounds like, you know, there was just a lot of sickness going on just throughout the family. And that's how the generational things continue to happen, right? It's just so sad until somebody in that family makes a decision that they're going to stop it somehow. But I'm so sorry that you have all of that going on. And I'm going to let somebody else get on and ask some questions. But thank you so much just for being so vulnerable. It's hard. And I did hear somewhere, real quick, I just want to say that I remember hearing in a conference one time that every time you tell your story, your body doesn't know the difference between what you are saying and what you are feeling. You're right back in where you're telling your story, where you were at the time. So, you know, be gentle with yourself and just know that we're all here to support you.
I know, and I much appreciate it. I know I can put a lot of torture on myself to pretend that nothing's happening, you know, that that's pretty much how I look at it, because, you know, I was once told when I was a child, you know, come on, you're supposed to be a man, you know, you're not supposed to cry.
Yeah.
You want to cry? I'll give you something to cry about. And
I heard that too.
But, you know, but they're not just kind words that my father would use. They're, you know, again, it's the swearing that it's just that one profound language that he'd used against me all the time. And, you know, I don't see no reason why a person would use that word to their child. I see no reason why it has to be said to a child in public when everyone's hearing it. And it's distasteful. It gives me goosebumps. It gives me, I don't like the word. I'm trying to be brave. I've been on here trying not to let my emotions go. I'm feeling it, but I'm really trying to stay strong as best I can.
You have something you can take a drink of and then take a deep breath before the next panelist comes on?
I do have a drink with me. But
yeah. Go ahead and take a drink and just take a break. Yeah, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Kim. And I just say, let the emotions out if you want, because this is a safe place. Inaska, this platform, this show, this is a place for you to speak your truth, to tell your story, give permission to feel the emotions. If you want, share them with us. We are here for you. And we're grieving for you. We're also grieving for ourselves, because I know Bill, our founder and CEO, has said, it may be slightly different, but our feelings are largely the same. So, you know, as I, you know, shed tears, whether they're internal or external, they're for you and they're for myself. So it's, you have permission. which is why I love this platform of the show that NASCA offers, because this is a safe place, a place where you can speak and be heard, and you do find empathy. So I'm going to bring on Tanika from Oregon. So, good day, Tanika.
Good day.
Good day.
Yes,
you are
good day.
Peter, I'm trying. I'm like at a C-minus now. You're at an A-plus, but you're on with Peter.
Hi,
good
day, Peter. This is Tanika Chambers. Good day, Peter. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You said it very well.
Yeah, you say you're trying. First of all, I want to thank you for being here. The way we break the cycle is not so much about the action, but our voice. Our voice has so much power to help others to heal, to find their healing path. And you mentioned that you are trying to be available and to keep calm. You're doing more than trying. I mean, just listening to your story, you are doing it. You're actually doing it. And you're, like was mentioned, your emotions are real. You deserve to express yourself in a safe way that you get your message across. The pain that you felt, you don't have to cover that up. I know there's a certain amount of, you know, we want to make sure that we're speaking in a way that people hear us and hear our voice and they understand. But definitely this is a space for you to share. So I so appreciate, as you know, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you living through it all, every second, every bit that you've gone through, that you are here to share your story. And that is, your story is powerful. And your story will touch. There's a reason why you're telling your story right now, because it's touching someone's heart. Whoever is listening to, I hope they see that you have the strength and the courage to tell your story, because right now you are embodying that strength and that courage and that voice for everything that you've been through. Thank you so, so much. And I'm so grateful that you are here, that you're so honest, and that just everything. I don't know all that you've done, but in sharing your story and you being here tonight, that says a lot, a whole lot.
I much appreciate those comments. Tanika, you said?
Tanika, yes.
I very much appreciate those comments. You know, and it's like I said a little bit at the beginning, because I heard this conversation happen in one of the groups that I'm involved with, you know, and I keep hearing this word about awareness. I just did a fundraising event not so long ago about awareness, and I'm thinking, you know, this is how I want to look at it, that it is putting the awareness out there for those who have survived, of adult survivors, and not just for adult survivors, but if their parents are, you know, not aware of what's going on with their children, I mean... Oh my goodness! It's I do have a soft spot for children, and you know, because I don't like to see a child damaged. I don't like to see anyone damaged. But we are. I mean, I've heard it so many times before that, you know, we're all abusers. We're all in the same boat, and I just try to do my very best to, you know, to be part of a society, to share my story as well as among others, to get that awareness, you know, not just for the women, but the men as well. Get the men to come out, come forward. I mean, I know my mother and father won't listen to this because... It's not going to be them. They won't listen to it because then, you know, I just want it for people to hear this, and I don't know. I've got to calm down. I'm really getting worked up again. But But I do appreciate it because I do apologize for everyone that listens if I do laugh. It's just my other way of hiding my feelings, my emotions. So I have the tendency, I have this habit of laughing behind my pain. So I know it's not funny, but I just thought I'd let everybody know. But thank you, Tamika.
I mean, we all cope, as stated, and I've said it before too as well, is that different situations, different experiences, but we all tend to have the same things that we're dealing with, the betrayal, you know, the trust, the faith, and all those things that go into a boat. And again, you know, a lot of times too, because often, even as survivors, we sometimes think that we're not doing enough. And that's why we use the word try, because we feel like there's so much that needs to be done because we've been through the pain. And like you said, you know, your pain actually helped develop empathy and compassion. And as a survivor myself, I get that you don't want anyone else to go through what you went through, and you're doing the best you can. And so I understand that, you know, even myself, in feeling like I'm not doing enough, there should be more that I'm doing, but just one word, one voice of your story, the courage to say one story. You gave us multiple, you know, experiences that you went through, the courage just to share one of those and how you felt and what happened to you. You're doing more than trying. And I, you know, I just hope that you see that you are doing something. Just being here tonight and the fundraiser you did, that's breaking the cycle of pain by increasing awareness. That's how you do it. That's part of it. And that is the role that evidently you have. And so just know whatever you have done, it did something. It did something. Your actions are not in vain. And even if the people tonight that are not listening that maybe, you know, would benefit from hearing it, like you said, parents, even if they're not listening, whoever is here that is listening, including myself, I know I benefit from hearing your story. It feels like you're not alone. And even if there's anything that people get from your message, I hope they hear from Peter that you are not alone. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tamika. Okay, Tamika is our rock star NASA sister and ambassador from Oregon. So, wow. I just love you, Tamika. I love everybody on the panel. We got the power panel going on right now in support of you, Peter. But, Tamika, I mean, I feel uplifted just by your dialogue with Peter. You got both of you. I mean, that is so impactful, just right there, that exchange that you just had. So thank you. And
thank
Peter,
you.
Thank you. So Peter, I've got John. Good day, John. You know you're on with Peter. So maybe you're on mute, John, but your mic is unmuted, so we'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Good day, Mike.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Was mine a little bit better, or was it I got work to do, huh?
Yeah, I might have to tweak it just a little bit.
Yeah, Peter, I just want to tell you, first of all, that I love you, man. You know, I love everything about you, and I will always be here for you no matter what, okay? And I can't believe, you know, everything that you went through is everything that we strive for in life to prevent, okay? You have everything that is possible in life that happened to you, you know, regarding to what we do, you know? And you are definitely a unique, very unique situation, you know? Between all of the abuse, the incest, that almost happened, you know, it was close, things like that, the mental, the physical, you know, the sexual, okay? These are the things that, by you coming on tonight, really educates everyone on what is real in life in this, you know. And with your type of personality, the way you're telling your story tonight is off the charts, Peter. You know, I can't tell you enough how proud I am of you by being here tonight. And you know, you're with us all the time, but to tell your story and like you are tonight is something that really puts me on another level with you, you know, knowing about the details and the way you are expressing those details are the truth, okay? And this is what we need. We need to express the truth exactly the way it is. Without yep. that, you know, we can talk about things, about topics, about certain things, but unless we know exactly what happened, for other people to look for. And that's what you're doing tonight, man. You know, it's so important. You know, every time that I hear you speak, I'm just shutting my mouth, you know, because you have experienced everything that I stand against, but stand for on your side, you know. And I'm very sorry everything happened to you, but you need to know that the empathy with everyone that's on this panel and around the world that's listening tonight is with you, man. You know, there's no doubt about it. And I do want to tell you that I can't express how much I love you, and I'm so proud to be a friend and everybody else that's on this panel tonight. Y'all are beautiful people. And Peter, you're right there, you know. And I want you to continue telling your story the way you are, because it's very important that we know, you know, your activities, what you thought, how things were, you know, and this reacts to people in their real life, you know, having the cousin and God, the parents, man, you know, this is something that it's out of control. It was totally out of control. You know,
well, very much.
And how you made it through it, I just never know. You know, but you are a warrior. And I want to ask you just one question. That's all. I want to know exactly what it takes these days in somebody in your position to be strong enough to tell your story like you are tonight. How far has it come for you? What does it take for you to be here tonight? How strong do you have to be to tell your story tonight? You know, what does it take, Peter? You know, for you to reach out and tell your story like you are tonight on this scale. I mean, what does it take?
I would put it to us. I mean, you know, it's tough for any of us that have been through abuse, you know, that we're reliving our past and abuse. And for us, that might have people on the outside that are friends, and, you know, we get backlash and say, why do you have to keep living in the past? You know, again, I've learned this with the group. With the recovery groups, is that, you know, it's not so much of living in that past. You know, we can move forward, but the, you know, when we get triggered, with the trauma that, I mean, oh my goodness,
exactly.
a scale of 5 out of 10 for me, because I mean, you know, I am on suicidal watch at the moment, and so that's the toughest part. So
Peter, you're telling me that right now that you're on suicidal watch because of everything that's happened to you? That's where you are right now?
Pretty much. I mean,
That's totally devastating to me. You know, no matter what, Peter, I want you to know that we love you, okay, most of all. And you don't have to go that far, okay? We need you. That's the bottom line. I mean, I need you. I need you bad. You know, every time we talk, every time that I listen to your story, and when you have advice, that's what we need, Peter. You know, I need you for your advice, man. We all need you for your advice. You know, and I'm in a position, and you know this, that I run extensive male support. Nothing against any female or anything, and that could be too. But every time I listen extensively because I'm learning from your experience along with mine and everybody else's. But you have a very unique situation, and I'm very proud of you, Peter, you know, for what you're doing, okay? And I love you to death, man. Okay. I'm going to let it go. Yeah.
Thank you, John. You know, whenever John comes on and speaks, he is so articulate, but with this passion. And he says everything I'm thinking, but he says it in a way that just gets me so fired up, right? And I resonated. You know, everything resonates with me, and I hope you heard what he said because absolutely spot on. Believe it or not, we're already an hour into the show. And, you know, I know that there's so much more to your story. But I actually want to take this half an hour to talk about, I have a couple questions for you. I want to know, number one, how you found NAFCA in your journey. And I'd like to talk about your healing journey. So I'd like to hear how you found NAFCA.
That's a good question. To be honest, I started counseling at the age of 40, so that's probably about the time when I first came out and telling my story, and I guess years, and even when I was living, living here in Ontario, and I don't know. I guess I was Googling about sexual abuse, child abuse, and such, and I saw this site, and I don't know. I called up and spoke to the staff members of the members of NASCO. And I did my first radio back in January, and that's when it was January of this year. So that's pretty much how I've been in touch with NASCAR. So I was doing search for child abuse, trying to find something here in Chatham, around the Windsor area, anything that can relate for men that's been through sexual abuse, and I stumbled across the organization in the U.S. I'm thinking, oh, what the heck, you know, it's in America, and I'm up here in Canada, you know, wondering what was this going to be all about, but that's pretty much how I came to find out about it, Penelope, and so, you know, but, yeah.
Well, I appreciate you, you know, answering my question, because NAFCA is, to me, right, your story resonated with me on a lot of different levels. And I think there is this unfortunate, you know, we have families that were biologically born into or were, you know, were adopted into or we experienced, you know, in foster care. But we have we are placed as children in an environment where we don't receive the nurturing, we don't receive the treatment that we have a right to. We have it's a right to be living in an environment where you're safe.
Yeah.
Protected. And a lot of us, we're not born into those environments. But that's why we call it the family,
Yes.
Right? Because you truly have a family. And for me, right, even though the show's not about me, NAFTA was a place where I could speak. I was able to find my voice. I was heard. This is a platform that you're on tonight. You have empathy. You have compassion. You have, you know, you have what you didn't receive as a young child. But you also have kinship. The empathy comes from understanding.
Yeah.
So, and because you're not alone. And I think Tamika and John and Kim, I mean, I think we all verbalize that and maybe with slightly different words. But you know, I think when you choose to come on to NAFTA show, now you've been, we do like to do the shows about 10 months apart, and you're at that point, right, where you were on 10 months ago. But I have to say, and I was there, like I said, I believe I hosted your first show or a co-host, and I know that's where we met. I think you've all already chosen life. You've chosen healing. You've chosen optimism and hope, and you've chosen to share your pain to help others. I think, to me, because you've chosen to be a part of NAFTA and to, you know, be a brother among us, I think it's pretty clear to me that you've chosen that path.
Yeah, I mean, if I may, Penelope, add on, you know, like for everyone that wants to know, you know, like, my molestation didn't stop after once I moved from New South Wales to Queensland with my cousin. It all stopped. But at the age of 14, I went to a different school and, still living with my father because my father had divorced. He remarried to another lady and she had five other kids. Still left me being the oldest in the family. And, you know, so I took up music. I took music lessons at the age of 14, and the music teacher was doing private lessons. My tutoring fee was to my tutoring fee was for sexual touching and for sex. And while, you know, when I was doing all my lessons, he'd reach around, the music teacher would reach around and touch me between my legs to get me aroused all the time. And either he would do it, my music teacher would do it at home, at his home when I was doing my lessons, or we'd go for a drive out to the local reservoir, out to the dam, and leave me there. He would sometimes just leave me there. And so, you know, the music teacher incident, and then I thought the molestation had stopped from there. But at the age of 15, I was molested in a boys' prison. I went to a boys' prison for a crime that I did not commit, and the crime, which was arson, and I was accused for being truthful, accused for being honest about the crime, except my father had to take that one step, take that one notch up further by his threat, his verbal language of using that C word, you know, pardon, you know, and I will say again to everyone, you know, I do apologize for the language. He'll call me a compulsive lying cunt. He would threaten me with a loaded shotgun to get the truth out of me. You know, what is a 14-year-old, 15-year-old supposed to do when you've got a loaded shotgun barrel stuck right to your gut. You know, oh, okay, I'm just going to give in because I want to save my own life without getting shot. But I was in the boys' prison. I was living in the cell with an inmate. I was molested in my cell. And then I was also molested in the bathroom by several other inmates. And, you know, so it was everything had been so confused with me. And, you know, it came about that, you know, I moved back to New South Wales, to Sydney, to my grandparents, who raised me for 13 and a half years with love. They sheltered me of protection. And I was diagnosed in March 1990 of having HIV. I've been a survivor of it for 31 years of my life. And it's perhaps that I've endured this infection ever since I was a child. I was told that my cousin had it, and that when I was gang molested in the dressing shed, I don't know the three guys that molested me. I don't even know if they were infected or not. And so, you know, I've had a long road of living with HIV to this very day. You know, 45 years of being a sole survivor, you know, through abuse. I've had people come up to me and said, Peter, how is it that you've managed to survive this? You know, my grandparents were everything to me. They were my grandfather, granddad. He was my mate. He was my best friend, and he died in front of me from a massive heart attack, you know, and, you know, to see your loved one die in front of you, it's not easy as well, and it tried to expedite things along, but, you know, as I said earlier, Penelope, and to everybody on here, is that, you know, I was 40 years old when I first actually spoke out, and this was on this side of the world when I first spoke out about my abuse. I'm still doing counseling today, you know, with the NASCA group, recovery group. I'm with other groups now. I've just got in with the men's group now. I feel much better, but I'm still healing. There's this little boy that's still stuck in me that needs to be released. Or I just can't get to that little boy. And that little boy is Peter. And, you know, it's like he's terrified. I can't get to him. But, you know, I just want to say, you know, it is a privilege to... And I want to say thank you to NASCA for allowing me this second chance to share my story. I know it's quick because of what I've just shared in the last few moments, but I, you know, it's, you know, it's, I feel I'm appreciative of NASCA and all you guys for allowing me to come back on here to continue on my story. From what I've been through, and that knowing that my journey is to continue in following the pathway of self-discovery. And I just look at it in a way that I do hope it gets out there, whether it's me that's sharing a story, whether it's you, Penelope, or anyone that's on this panel, you know, of getting it out there so that people can hear. It's just, I don't have nothing to offer. I don't have nothing to show, like what I hear when people say that, you know, they've created doing a book or whatever it is that they do. Congratulations. I applaud for their work. For me, you know, I'm just a simple Aussie battler living in Canada, and the only thing I can say that I have is family and that I will always trust, because trust is the biggest issue for me. I will never trust anybody. I don't know how.
I totally understand that.
Love is the hardest thing, but if there's one person for me to trust, and that's God. He's the only friend that I have. He's sitting right alongside me, and I've got this shield over me that he's protecting me and making sure that I'm safe. And he's the only person that I trust. So I thank everybody on this panel and the host for allowing me to share.
Well, it's a privilege to be on the show with you, Peter, and to, you know, hear your testimony. And I would like to, because we have 18 minutes left, I would like to invite our panel in one more time with you before the show ends. And so, Kim, I'm just going to invite you on with Peter. As we are in the final segment, this is the Peter shared more of his story and then talked about his healing journey. This is the third segment where we focus on the healing journey and the, you know, the present time, present moment, you know, of the show. So in a positive way. So I wanted to just turn it over to you, Kim, and allow you to interact with Peter.
Hey, good day, Peter.
Good day, Kim.
Thank you. I just said thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing all of that. I believe that the way that I've healed is my faith as well. And I think that that's huge. That's what, I don't know how people can heal without that. So can I ask you a question about your faith?
Sure.
Yes. Well, so how did you come about that you have?
It would have been in 2012 when I ended up becoming a reborn Christian, and then I was baptized in that year, and you know, and up until this day, it's just this might sound crazy to a lot of people, you know, I do get it from some people that it's just in my head, but I feel a lot of power from him because, you know, I try to stay with him, try to focus on him, not worry about anyone else but him, and, you know, it's just like when I mentioned to John that, you know, I've been on I'm on suicidal watch. Just a few weeks ago, I went to near the railway line. There was a train coming, and it's just all of a sudden I felt this urge of power that pulled me back away from that train. I couldn't do it, and he was there to save me. And because I know it's like he's telling me, I'm not done with you yet. And you've got people out there. I'm very strong with him. He's really powerful with me. And
that's great. And I'm so glad that God got a hold of you and pulled you from that train. And I would love to be one of your support people and pray with you anytime. So why don't you find me on Facebook, and I will, under Kim Lakin, L-A-K-I-N. I was just looking for you. I wasn't finding you on there, but I would just love to be one of your support people if you will have me. So
well, look under Penelope, because I'm on Penelope's list.
Oh, find under Penelope. Oh, okay. I'll find you there, then. I will. Thank you.
I can definitely get you two connected.
I want to give. Yeah. Yeah, I'd like that. And are you seeing a trauma counselor? Is that who you go see as somebody that's specializing in trauma?
I'm currently seeing a replacement counselor because the one that I was seeing, she went on maternity leave. And so he's on the holidays at the moment. He won't be back for another week. So he's been helping me through. I've got the Canadian Mental Health Association behind me. They'll call, you know, they call me at least once, twice a week just to check up on me and making sure that I'm alive and that I'm not doing anything stupid, so.
Good. And reach out to us as well, Peter, really. We're here for you. We want to be here for you as well.
Oh, I'm here for me too.
Good. That's good to hear. I like that. Thank you, Peter. I'll let you get on to the panel.
No, thank you,
Kim. I look forward to talking to you.
Thank you, Kim. I will definitely get you two connected. And I'm going to bring on Tamika now. So good day, Tamika. You're back on with Peter.
Good day, Penelope. Thank you so much. Peter, I'm so glad you listened to that voice that told you to step away, that you, I'm not done with you yet. Oh, beautiful. I'm just glad you're here. There isn't really no, I don't have any questions. Just very, a lot of gratitude in my heart that you mentioning your faith and how you listen to that voice within that confirms, Peter, your life has purpose. You are here for a reason. And your pain is the light, can be the light, is the light for other people to find their healing path, your pain. And so I'm just so grateful you're here, and that's, I just want to leave with that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Tamika. That was beautiful. Thank you. Well, good day, John. You are on with Peter.
Yeah, thanks, Tamika. That was absolutely beautiful. You know, it's really hard to come back on and tell you stuff like she just described, and she basically hit everything, you know, that I feel for you, Peter, and about you. And I want you to know that I'm always going to be your friend, okay? And I'll always be here for you, no matter what, okay? And that is for as long as we are alive, period. The other thing I want to tell you is that I know that you love a lot of things that I do. I saw golf. I saw music. And I'm gonna play a song for you after we get off here, and I'm going to send it to you. And I just sent you a friend request, by the way. But I'm gonna play a song for you. And by the way, I have probably 30 guitars. So I do play a lot of music, and that's kind of like my – you know, my way of expressing a lot of things. Do you feel that way too about it? Do you do that with music on different days?
I don't know if any of you guys would know these three artists. I listen to Era, I listen to Vangelis, and I listen to Celtic Women.
Okay. So you think that by listening to what you listen to, that it helps with a lot of your emotions and feelings and puts you in a better mood, basically?
I mean, there's a particular song on Era that I listen to, and it's very emotional on my part, but I try to, you know, I'm trying to ground myself because, it's a brother trying to look after his. It's a brother who wants to look after his sister and his mother to try and get some food, and you know, right. something happened. So, I try to listen to the most relaxing, soothing type music that I can. But
I agree with you. Do you listen to where you're from originally, I thought that you might be a Little River Band or Ambrosia fan, you know, being from down there originally in Oven, you get a huge, you know. Do you like bands like that at all? What type of music do they play, and why do you listen to it? In other words, is it a soothing, relaxing type atmosphere, and the words have meaning?
Well, I mean, when I was involved in youth in search camps, they used to play these songs, and, you know, a song, you know, I Want to Know What Love Is, you know. I still try to play that song. I still try to keep playing that song.
That's
to
a
know
beautiful
what
song,
to know what love is, and, you know, I part of me does know what love is, but the other part of me doesn't know what love is. You know, when I'm with the recovery group and everyone says, you know, I love you, Peter, and all this, I can't say it back.
I understand.
It's too
and that
hard
is
for me.
A very, very good song, Peter, that you picked, okay? And I want to tell you that I'm so proud of you, man, for what you did tonight. You touched a lot of people in a very special way. I want to let you know that because let me tell you, I talk to so many people, and I know we don't have much time left, but I want to tell you something, that your message tonight was so extensive, okay, because you opened up a lot of eyes. And you really describe things in detail that people need to know, because what the truth is and what to look for, you know, because it's all about the protection of our kids, man. You know, that's what it's all about. Look, whatever happened to us happened. Yes, we can do things about it. But you know what? I can't stand. It's something that's been untold or undone against all of this crap, so to speak, okay, for the safety of our kids, you know. They don't have any idea what things could be like in our position, you know, and I don't want them to ever live this kind of life, and I don't think anybody needs it in that life, you know, but it's going to take us. It's going to take us to get the message out and make sure that this don't happen anymore, and you are a reason why, okay, extensively.
Sure.
I'm here to tell you that this is not BS. I've never talked that way, Peter. You know me by now. This is great, okay? It's great for everyone, and it's great for you too. You know, it really is, man. So I just want to let you know that, yes, and I'm not going to expect anything back, but all my love is with you, okay? And I'll be here every day if you need something, and that's it.
No worries. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Bob.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you so much. You know, this is just this show, even though, Peter, you know, your story, and I don't, you know, this is not in any way diminish the impact of your story or to minimize your experiences that you shared with us from your childhood. But, you know, I'm just listening to all the support from your NASCA family on the panel, and to me, this has just been such an incredible representation of, you know, you, your strength, and the power of healing and the support, you know, and the family, really the kind of support that we never had in the situations that we were in. That is the kind of support and understanding that I have found with NASCA, with the NASCA family, and I really, really, my heart is full as I'm listening and witnessing that tonight. And, you know, I know that also with NASCA, and I'm with you, you know, sometimes I hear about things that people are doing, you know, within their healing journey or as a result of, you know, continuing on their healing journey where their accomplishments are mentioned. You know, books are launched and other, you know, groups or websites are formed to help and support other people. And I know sometimes you feel, well, I haven't done that or I'm not doing that. But one thing I've learned, too, just from being a member of NASCA, is that we don't, we shouldn't and we don't compare. Everybody's on a different path of their healing journey. Everybody's on a different point. And
yes.
It's just right. And I do understand that. But you know, when I'm listening to this, your interaction with the panel members and how it just kind of, for me, it epitomizes what NAFTA is all about. And I think that you've given everybody the opportunity by sharing your story for us to provide that. And that's healing for us as well. That is a part of our healing. So that is something that your testimony is the impact that it's making. And that's the work that you're doing. And that's the way you're giving back. And as you know, we hear and we know, of course, the silence is a prolific enabler of abuse. I always say that. Yes, you know, we need more people to come forward earlier in their recovery. But I also know we need as many male voices as we can, because we know that men coming forward and speaking their truth is an area where we know that men are not feeling comfortable about doing that. And you coming on tonight and sharing everything that you shared, you are giving so many other men and people permission to do that. And I don't think that should be minimized. I think that's huge, Peter. And that's enormous.
Well, how much time is there left?
We've got a minute and a half.
Well, you know, all I can say is that I'm doing this for my own reason, and that's to get it out there for awareness and to try and encourage adult survivors who still remain hidden from their abuse, or if there are parents that got children that's been abused, you know, that to come forward there are people out there think this is a game. It's not a game. This is a dead set serious. And, you know, and if people want to think it's a game, then go someplace else and find something else that you think that's a game, because I won't accept that, you know, whether it's people being abused when they were children, or, you know, people that are suffering with cancer or anything, you know, it's not a game. It's definitely not a game. And then just quickly, I want to say that Jeremiah 29:11 is one of my favorite scriptures, because I know he has plans for me and that I have a future. So if anyone's interested, Jeremiah 29:11, because I know he has plans for me and I have a future. So I do thank everybody then.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for sharing that scripture with us and giving people a reference point on that. Well, on behalf of NAFTA, I wish to thank Peter Elsley, our NAFTA brother, for coming on and being so brave and telling us his story this evening. And I wish to thank my power panel, Kim Lakin from Colorado, ambassador, and also a NAFTA host, my co-host this evening, Tamika Chambers from Oregon, also a NAFTA ambassador and a NAFTA Blog Talk Radio show host, and John Anderson, NAFTA from Louisiana, and also a NAFTA talk show radio host. We wish to thank you, and as I always say, every single child in this world deserves to be safe, and it is our priority and our job, our more responsibility as adults. There are enough adult eyes in this world to keep every child safe. If you see something, you must say something. So I wish to thank you on behalf of NAFTA. And good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
After all that you've done, I know.
Blog Talk Radio.